Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the game for 30-some-odd years, maybe closer to 40 years at this point. I don't know. Who's counting? But he's been an automotive tech, service advisor, assistant service manager, an expert on, I would say, German cars. But you get a lot of calls about Japanese cars and American cars on this
program.
Yeah,
we get them all.
Yeah. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us, WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag VoxPop. Or go to Facebook, WAMC Radio. There is a Vox Pop post there. But the number to call, once again, 1-800-348-2551. What's the toughest nationality of car to work with?
I would say it is going to, the Germans are going to take the cake.
I knew it.
Yeah. And a lot of it is the technology, but some of the higher-end cars, the Mercedes-Benz and if you're talking the whole of Europe, Mini Cooper, which is a BMW product,
yep.
They, and we've spoken about this before on the show, they tend to be a bit reluctant in releasing repair information to the repair world outside of their dealership
network.
Is
that even ethical or legal?
There were laws passed many years ago in the 70s that mandated that they had to release certain information so their vehicles could be serviced and repaired anywhere.
Yeah.
And they do. They comply with that, but they comply with it as tightly as possible. And if it's not mandatory to release the information, they won't let it out. And if you do want to purchase that information, it's very expensive.
Well, that's that doesn't seem right. When there's safety or someone's investment at play.
Yeah. Well, all emissions, and I think safety has to be provided. I know emissions for sure.
Mm.
But yeah, that's the frustrating part, because if you don't have the information, you know, you're almost lost now because it's so complicated.
Well, the lines are loaded, but as far as German cars, I always wondered, some of those Porsches you hear about, and I don't know if they do this anymore, but they were air-cooled. How the heck can you air-cool a car in a warm climate?
Well, it's very similar to your push mower, lawnmower, where there is a fan mounted on the engine that blows air over the cylinders and cylinder heads, and it's a little crude by today's technology, but in the 30s and 40s and 50s and on up, Volkswagen and Porsche, which were very high, pretty closely related in the early years, did use air cooling. It was very simple. No coolant, no water pump. It made the engine lighter, not relying upon keeping the water in there and the antifreeze and all that. But it put a damper on performance and efficiency and emissions because the temperature range of the engine was way too wide.
Yeah.
But it worked.
But, I mean, even with a high performance, I mean, you think Porsche, you think high performance engines,
yes,
and, you know, lots of horsepower, and they must get very hot.
Yeah, they reached a point where air cooling alone couldn't handle it anymore. So they went to liquid cooling, even on the 911, which was the air-cooled mainstay for decades.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We start out with Brian in Duanesburg. Brian, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Graff.
Hello.
Automotive Professor Fricke.
Hello.
Hi. I have an Audi 2008 A6 S Series with a 3.2, and I've heard rumors of carbon building up in the plenum. I'm running top-tier gas in it to prevent that. Is there anything else I should do? Is there a particular oil I should try, or any information would be very helpful?
Yeah. There are a few things that would be advisable with an engine like yours. Your engine uses direct fuel injection.
Right.
So the fuel is now being sprayed directly into the cylinder head now. Previously, it was sprayed into the intake track in front of the intake valves. And in the early years,
gasoline direct injection, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So that cleans up the intake valve contamination problem, but it seems to be a lot of vapors are still getting back into the intake track, like you were saying, and creating some trouble with the intake flap controls and various components in there. I don't know how much an additive will help, but it's highly advisable to use a Tecron additive in your gasoline at various times. And there's different doses. You could add it as a maintenance. You can fool around with the volume that you put in the tank. But that would be one thing to do. And as far as your question that talks about extra maintenance in general, definitely have your oil and filter changed more often than is recommended. Go to the what's called the severe duty schedule, which probably cuts your intervals about in half.
Right, right. And the top tier gas is a good idea?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely.
Thanks, Brian. We appreciate the call. Speaking of gas, there is one local gas retailer in our area and who has non-ethanol premium.
Yes.
And I was filling up the wife's truck the other day. And so I said, well, I'm going to try this. I mean, this truck doesn't say give us high octane premium.
No.
I didn't hurt it by putting 92 octane
no,
in, did I?
No, not at all. In fact, I believe, and I'm not sure of what station or what brand you're talking about, but there is 91 octane ethanol free available.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
And your wife's vehicle is new enough to where it is totally designed to run on an ethanol blend.
Yeah.
That thing can probably handle 15% or greater if it's a flex fuel. So no, you didn't hurt a thing. You went back to the gasoline when there was no alcohol blended with it.
Right.
Is it more expensive? I haven't checked because we don't have anywhere we are.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
It really wasn't too bad. So for an older vehicle, it would be better?
Absolutely. I would advise that to be used in lawnmowers, chainsaws, rototillers, all your small engine needs. They do not like all this ethanol. They're not designed for it. It creates trouble with the carburetors and the plastic parts that are in older equipment. That's a great thing to use in older cars and your off-road equipment.
All right. And can you put Tecron in a lawnmower?
Yes, you can.
Really?
You put it in anything. Any engine, I should say.
All right. Let's go to the phones once again. And Bob in Chatham. Bob.
Good morning. Good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I've got an 08 Sable V6, and I've had problems with the transmission. It's got 93,000 miles on it. And when the engine's warm, you go to a stop sign and you start from the stop sign, it tends to lurch forward and jump and do all sorts of little things. But it only does it once in a while. My friend told me about a new product called TransTune, and he said that helped his car when he was having problems. Do you guys know anything about that?
I can't comment on that particular brand, but there are additives for everything. Power steering, cooling systems, oil, engine oil, and some of them have great merit and they do a lot of good. Transmission additives are a little touchy because if there's a mechanical issue occurring in the transmission, there is the potential for some additives to make it worse. And you're never going to know if that's the case until you pour it in and it gets worse. And even then it could be a coincidence.
Well, I had it checked out. I had the whole thing checked over and from a transmission guy, and he couldn't find anything wrong with it. And that's my dilemma.
Yeah, so it's a very intermittent condition.
Yes.
As far as the fluid maintenance, have you had the fluid changed and or flushed at all in that car?
Not since we've owned it. He didn't want to do it until he could figure out what the problem was.
Yeah, and he's apprehensive that if you feel there could be a problem, and he does a fluid flush or a fluid change, and then a week later the transmission fails, he's going to feel, the premise could be, hey, what happened here?
Yeah.
So that's why he's being very careful.
Okay.
Do you know anything about Sables, if this is a common problem in 08, or have you heard it before?
Well, in the earlier year Sables and Tauruses, they had a lot of transmission problems. I mean, a lot. But I think by 08, it wasn't really much of an issue at all. In fact, that's a different car than that last generation.
Uh-huh.
So I think I would, if it did require any fluid maintenances, unless you got super high mileage and the fluid is horrible, it might be a good idea to do that first.
Okay, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. We will take a break. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be back. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number.
Support for WAMC comes from Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research. Member FINRA SIPC. SPAC, presenting the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center for 6 performances, August 9th through the 25th at the Spa Little Theater. SPAC.org for tickets. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York. Announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional services and supplies to owners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this summer featuring the later drawings of Andy Warhol, 1973 to 1987, organized by the Andy Warhol Museum, one of the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh, HydeCollection.org, and Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, AshfieldStone.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is here, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Barbara in Kingston. Hiya, Barbara, you're on.
Hello, Gordon and Ray. I have two simple questions. I have a 1995 Toyota Avalon, and it says in the manual, don't turn off your key to your engine until you've shifted into park. And I sometimes, maybe a couple of times a day, it's in some gear. And yeah. How much damage will that cause my car? And the other question is a quick one. It's very hard to get my gas cap to click when I turn it to the right. So sometimes it doesn't click, and I drive that way. Am I doing any damage?
I think the answer is no for both of your questions. I think that the owner's manual just wants to be sure that you're in park when you're shutting the engine off, so you're not potentially moving. And now when you turn the key off, you've lost the engine, but you're still going, so you're going to have a hard time steering it. That's more of a safety.
So she's driving it. You're driving a manual, Barbara?
Automatic.
It's an automatic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're not harming anything, and it's not that uncommon for people to sometimes turn the engine off before you're in park, just, you know, out of haste or whatever.
Right.
And as far as the gas cap goes, no. And on your car, even if you were not clicking at 100% tight, your check engine light won't come on. Your system doesn't monitor your gas tank vapors. If you were a 96 car, you would be.
Yeah,
but you could just simply buy a new gas cap because that's where all the ratcheting occurs, is in the cap itself.
Yeah, right.
So get a new gas cap.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. Back in the old days, my old 65 Le Mans, I could pull that key right out while I was driving.
Yeah. Wasn't that great with those cars?
Oh, I loved that. Yeah. That was always a great function. And all my friends would say, what are you doing?
You could take it out of park without your foot on the brake pedal.
Yeah.
What about seat belts? Did you even have them?
Maybe. It was a long, long time ago. Let's go to Matt and Troy. Matt, you're on.
Hello, guys. Hello, Ray, Gordon.
Hello.
Hello. Great show, guys.
Thanks.
I called with a question about a tire issue. I have a brand new Dodge pickup truck, two-wheel drive. I just bought it a few months ago. I already had it back to the dealer. It's when you're going, you know, very slow so you can hear it, you won't hear it on the highway, but it's kind of a thumping in the tire. Of course, when I brought it back, they said it was a normal type noise, but I don't believe it is. Everybody that's a passenger in the car seems to hear it and ask me what it is, and I have no answer for them. Have you heard of anything like this on a newer vehicle? Possible, maybe a broken belt or a bubble in the tire?
What do you hear? Is it rhythmic? In other words, every time the tire makes a rotation, you're hearing a sound?
Definitely, yeah, definitely rhythmic, yes.
And can you pinpoint it to one wheel?
It's so hard because, you know, you think you hear a noise, you think you can hear it, but it could be somewhere else, but I think it's the front left. Pretty sure.
Yeah. To confirm that it's from that wheel and tire, you could move that somewhere else on the vehicle, see if that sound transfers. Let's say you just rotated it to the driver's rear, and if you're certain that the noise moved, then you are chasing a potential tire noise.
Could there be anything more, any more underlying issue that could cause something like
Well,
ball joints, anything?
Well, let's say let's say somebody rotated the tire, and the noise didn't change. You still were pretty certain it was coming from the driver's front. Well, now you've got other rotational things to be concerned with. It could be a spot on the brake rotor. It could be something that's just not 100% true, and that's what's giving you that rhythmic sound. Does the sound change when you step on the brakes?
Not at all, no.
So it's just a straight rolling sound?
Yes.
Well, you've made it. You've brought it to the dealer's attention. So you've got it documented that you're concerned that there could be something going on there. I think I would, and I'm sure they checked and confirmed that it wasn't a safety issue to the best of their ability. I think I would drive it more, just see what happens. There is the potential that is something that just needs to wear in, and you may find that sound disappears.
I've actually heard that from my own mechanic. Now it has about 2,200 miles on it right now. Does it need more time?
Yeah, I would. I'd give it more time. To satisfy your curiosity, rotate the tires.
Okay, I will give that a shot.
Do it one at a time, though.
The tires are well inflated?
Yeah, perfect. The computer says they are anyway.
Yeah, I would do it one move at a time. Don't rotate them all around all over the place. Just take the left.
Just try the one.
Yeah, take the left front, go to the left rear, swap them, see if the sound transfers.
I was actually going to try that using my spare tire.
You could also do that? Yeah.
But some of the owner's manual said it's not an actual real tire, even though it's full size. It doesn't have... Have you heard of that?
Yeah, it won't be an identical. Oftentimes, it's not the same tire, rim, or even size other than height, so it rolls the same amount of turns per mile. So it will be a bit out of a tire in some cases.
Well, how cheap is that?
Well, they're saving. Yeah, you hit it, Ray. They are saving quite a bit.
Give
never
me a break.
Used to be like that.
You buy a new vehicle, and that's what you get.
A lot of cars don't even have spares anymore.
Really?
Think of it. No spare tire, no spare wheel, no jack, no wrench.
Yeah.
And extra space in the car. And the consolation prize is you either get an inflator bottle, some Fix-A-Flat.
Yeah.
Or run flat tires.
Well, and that's fun.
Okay, guys. Well, you answer my question.
Yeah.
Great. I thank you very much. We'll give that a try.
Yeah, that Fix-A-Flat stuff is pretty handy.
It can get you out of a lot of pickles in a short period of time.
Indeed. Let's go over to Bill in Gloversville. Bill.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have a Chrysler 200 that I bought brand new in 2012. So it's over 3 years old, and it's got 25,000 miles on it. However, in that time, I've had to replace the generator, the alternator, two batteries, a gas cap, and I don't know what else. But is this normal, or what is the quality of this automobile, in your opinion?
Interesting.
Well,
be careful. From our legal department, I would advise care here, Gordon.
Today, alternator failures are they last much longer than they used to.
There are no generators anymore.
Well, it's really just a mix. The term is, it is a generator. It generates electricity, but it's making the alternator makes AC current, alternating current.
Yeah.
But cars want direct current, DC current. So it's just the car manufacturers actually refer to them as generators, most of
really?
Them, or at least the European ones do. They always call it a generator. So it's the same thing, alternator generator.
Yeah.
So I've replaced that twice in that amount of time?
Yeah, that's very I don't see that as being a normal situation at all. Those things a lot of times now go 100,000 miles.
When you replaced it, did you get a factory one or a rebuilt?
A brand new. I bought it. It was under warranty the first time. The second time, it wasn't under warranty, and I had to pay for it.
Huh. Yeah, that's not a very common situation anymore. So to answer your question, no, I don't think you should have had to put two alternators on a 2012 car with only 25,000 miles on it.
Now, in one case, they called it an alternator. In the other case, they called it a generator.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah,
huh?
It's the same device. And maybe the dealership used their terminology in calling, because you don't have the device that keeps your battery charged is the alternator.
Okay.
Well, Bill, good luck with that. That sounds like a problem and a half. Let's go to Wayne in Hudson Valley. Wayne, you're on.
Hi there, guys. Subaru 2006. A couple months ago, I had the timing belt replaced at the recommended mileage, about 110, 115. And ever since I got it back, when I first started up, it idles really hard, horribly. If I'm just sitting in park somewhere for a while, rough idle, other people have noticed it, and I feel like there's a loss of power. So do you think that the belt jumped a tooth, or they didn't line up the marks quite right, or something random just happened right at that time?
Is your check engine light on?
Nope.
Okay.
Has not come on.
And I'm not sure on an 06, but later models, because there's a cam and a crank sensor, if the belt timing is off, it can detect that problem and turn on the check engine light, saying that there's a potential timing issue. But I'm not sure on your vehicle. But the potential for it to be a tooth off is entirely possible. And if it is, it will definitely make the engine run the way you describe. And it's not that terribly time-consuming to confirm on that car that your cam timing is on. You got to take some covers off the front of the engine.
They probably have to like take the belts off and then that cover over the belt.
Yeah,
yeah,
you got those plastic covers across the front of the engine. That's where the timing belt is located, and the marks are visible under there. So if there's a suspicion that the cam belt timing is off, it just, you have to physically confirm it. And if it's if it's off a tooth, it'll definitely give you those troubles. Other than that, at that mileage, Subaru, that car required some spark plug changes, and I'm not sure if they've been done yet. So I'd be concerned that other maintenance that would have been necessary at that time has been completed. And if the spark plugs are original, that's a lot of time engine.
No, I don't think they are. But, you know, it seems a little bit suspicious that it happened the day after I get the car back. You know, it was no problem prior to the belt change.
Yeah, and it certainly could be coincidental that something else happened. You know, cars are so complicated nowadays. So much stuff can go wrong. I'm amazed that less does go wrong. But having a big job like that, you know, you're concerned that something may have happened like that. So that would be my thing. Is it?
Do you think it's about 30 minutes for them to get in there and check the timing mark? That's a bit more than that.
I think it's going to take a little longer than that. So you have to be, you have to be suspicious that that could be the case. But it's worth checking.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne. We appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop at WAMC.org. And Gordon, this one came in via email from Kara. Says, I'm a senior and I'm quite happy with my 2015 Civic, except the way turning on the headlights during the day when I turn on the wipers causes the dashboard to go dark and I can't see any of the info there.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me feel safe. Any workarounds that would make the dashboard more visible in these circumstances? I understand in New York State I'm required to turn on lights when the wipers are on. This would be a fairly simple one, right?
Well, what I would make sure is the dial that brightens the interior lights is at the max. Because when you turn the headlights on, the assumption is that it's dark, and it drops the intensity of those lights down
right
for nighttime, so they're not overly bright. But if the dimmer is not maxed out, that's exactly what will happen. And I've run into this many times. I've had people come in and say, I don't know what's happened. All of a sudden, when I turn my lights on during the daytime, I can't read the dial on the radio, for example. So I think that's the simple answer.
Just turn it up.
Make sure they're as bright as they can be.
Yep, and you should have it should be on your left,
there's
right?
There's going to be a way. I know that car's, what year is it again, Ray?
2015 Civic.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's probably not a turn dial anymore. That's ancient technology now. It's probably a, you know, you probably stay on a button and it rises up some bars and makes it brighter. But that's what I would check.
All right, over back to the phones we go. Chester, no, is it Heston? I don't know who it is. In Niskayuna, you're on.
Oh, hi, it's Justin. It's Justin.
Oh, Justin. All right, fair enough. It says Cheston, actually, but you're on.
Never heard of that name.
No, nor have I, and that's what scared me as a radio host. You're on the air.
I've got a 2011 BMW 535i xDrive, and the tires that I have in it right now are summer tires all season. But one of the tires, the front right, front passenger, is considerably more worn out than any of the other tires, and I'm wondering how that could possibly happen.
How many miles are on the car now?
53.
And has the right front always worn faster than the other three since? Have you had the car since it was new?
No. I bought it used.
Okay. What does the wear pattern on that tire look like? Is it perfectly even, just less than the rest, or is it kind of angular and weird looking, where it's more worn on, let's say, the inside or the outside?
You know, I'd have to take a much closer look, but from what the look that I have taken at it, it was brought to my attention by the dealer. It seems to be just an even wear all through the tire.
Of course, what needs to be checked is the wheel alignment. And being an 11 car with 55,000, I'm sure it's out a little bit. Could be out a lot. You never know. One big ride over a curb or, you know, some a manhole. Or those sewer grates up on Hoosick Street. So alignment check is the first thing to do. And then a 535i, I don't think you have a staggered tire size. They're all the same tires on that car. So tire rotation is very important.
I do have snow tires on separate rims that I change out, you know, for the winter.
But your vehicle, the tires are rotatable on that. There are some of the M series and some of the sport suspensions. I think it's in the 3 series cars where the back tires are of a different size than the front. So you can't rotate them, but your car, you can. So I think an alignment and tire rotation is going to be the answer.
Okay.
Can I ask just a totally separate question?
I suppose. Go ahead, Cheston.
That same car, the engine seized about a month ago, and they replaced it. And they didn't replace it, obviously, with a brand new engine. But is there, and you mentioned at the top of the show that the Germans are very secretive with their information. Is there any way for me to find out equivocally how many miles are on the engine that was put into my car?
Well, was it a used engine?
Yes, presumably. Yes.
And where was the work done? You don't have to give me the name. Was it dealer or was it an independent repair shop?
Dealer. It was done under warranty.
Well, they wouldn't have put a used engine in the car under warranty. They
really?
They can't.
There was over 50,000, so it wouldn't be original factory. It would have been certified pre-owned.
If that was taken care of under BMW's factory warranty, you more than likely got maybe an exchange engine, a remanufactured engine from BMW. But the dealer right. is obligated to tell you where the part came from, what its level of warranty is, and all that. So definitely ask the dealer.
Okay.
Yeah, they won't not tell you that.
All right. Okay, great.
Thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and boy, this hour is going fast. The home stretch is on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Washington County Tourism, featuring cultural activities throughout Washington County, including museums, historic sites, trails, talks, and presentations, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Bodhi Spa, Yoga, and Salon, Hudson. Daily yoga classes, plus haircuts and color, massage, body treatments, and facials, scheduling hair and makeup services for weddings, BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring rainproof jackets, hats, and hunter wellies for women, men, and kids on Facebook and SaratogaSaddlery.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterville Avenue, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals, honestweight.coop. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, Saratoga, New York, featuring a children's section with toys, games, activities, and clothing, northshire.com. And Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades, shannonrose.com.
Fox, WAMC, Zach the engineer, can't see into the studio, but that's all right. Good line of sight now, Zach. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Wow, a lot of calls today.
They're really stacking up on us today, and we thought it'd be slow.
Yeah, we did. Let's go to Philip in Remsen. Philip.
Oh, hi.
You're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just got two quick questions.
Okay.
My first one is something with my catalytic converter. I've got a 2003 Impala that I just bought 2 months ago, and I've taken it to three different mechanics, and one of my guys was telling me about the catalytic converter. All three of them already did say it needed to be changed, and he was telling me about the new laws in place for that. I was just wondering if I could find out a little bit more about that. And my second question is regarding gas and everything. I really don't have the money, obviously, to afford the higher octane gas and everything to keep my engine running. And I was just wondering, is there any opportunity, what are ways I can keep that clean without having to go to the higher octane?
Yeah, that's a bit of a misconception. The octane is there only to offset higher compression engines. Euro 3 Impala is made to run on regular pump gas.
87.
Yeah. Unless all it's right, an Impala SS or, a performance car. So you don't have to worry about the gasoline.
All right. So with the ethanol, it doesn't make a difference?
That's a different story.
Well, even in 03, I mean, that car can handle the 10% that's in everything now. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about the gas. But your first question was if you have to replace that catalytic converter. And yes, laws in New York State changed, and the catalytic converter that New York State will only allow to be sold and installed in New York is called CARB certified, C-A-R-B, and it has to do with California emissions. And the CARB certified catalytic converters have more catalyst. There's more material in them. They last longer and clean the air better, but they're a lot more expensive. And that's all you can replace that car with. that catalytic converter with is a CARB certified. So they're harder to find, and they're way more expensive.
And they're platinum? Is that why they're expensive?
They still have all the same things in them, all the precious metals, but it's a larger bed of catalyst. There's more material in there. And they're required, the companies that build them are mandated to warranty these for, I think, 5 years or 50,000 miles. So that's
right.
It. You got it. It's an expensive converter now.
Yeah.
All right. And just one last thing. Does it matter if it's universal fit or direct fit?
No, as long as it's CARB certified.
All right, then. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. This is from Jeff via email. I have a 2011 Chevy Express 1500 V6 rear-wheel drive, and my dash is telling me to service Stabilitrack traction control. I only use it in the winter, and I'm very busy with work right now. Am I potentially doing damage driving it as is, or would you need to know what it is actually wrong with it to answer that question? That's from Jeff.
Well, I can give a basic answer that it's okay to drive it, and that it's a traction control system. And what that does is it works with your anti-lock braking system to it will prevent wheels from locking up on hard braking, and it'll prevent wheels from spinning on acceleration when traction is low. So the only downfall is if he's in slippery going, and he kind of indicated that he's kind of more concerned about it in the winter than he is now, that I don't see that there's harm being done in driving it
okay.
That way.
All right.
Yeah.
Back to the phones, and Dave in Pittsfield, Mass. Dave, you're next.
Yes, good afternoon. I've got a 2008 Toyota Tacoma. I had two tires put on, new tires, one a few weeks or so before the other one. And the second tire they put on, I decided to check the pressure. And one tire, the two tires that I had put on, one tire had 51 pounds, one tire had 52 pounds. But on the door jamb, it says to put in 29, and that's what I've been putting on ever
yeah.
since I've had the vehicle. And I'm wondering if by them pumping it up to 51 and 52 pounds, was any harm done to the tires?
No. No. If you look on the sidewall of any tire, it will give you the maximum inflation. And what that means is if you're going to put the maximum load in the vehicle, the tire manufacturer says this is how much air you can put in it. And on a Tacoma, you might see that max inflation pressure up to 50 pounds. Today, with all the tire pressure monitoring systems on cars that happened in, I think, 09 and newer was mandatory, checking tire pressures is way more important than it used to be. So to answer your question, yes, they should go back to the pressure that they're required to have in them. And according to the sticker on your door, now I'm of the thought of going a few pounds more than that to give you a slightly less rolling resistance, maybe a hair better economy, a little bit better handling. But you don't need to have the 51 in them, but it didn't hurt the tires. So put them back down and maybe add 2 pounds to the sticker and you'll be fine.
Dave, thanks a lot. Now, that's an interesting point. You have the sticker inside the door and it tells you the recommended pressure.
Right.
What if you get aftermarket tires? What if you replace the tires and the specs can be different though, right?
Well, you know, there was a time when people would fool around with tire sizes, especially during muscle car years where the back tires were always bigger and fatter and wider.
Yeah.
Pretty much now you stick with the size that the vehicle came with because of things like anti-lock brakes and stability and traction control. The car was engineered for a specific size tire and diameter for those systems to work properly. So nowadays, you shouldn't vary from the size that the car came with.
I guess my question wasn't put well, but if you bought another tire after you had purchased the car new, and you say, God, you had Goodyear, you went and you got some Firestones, are they all going to be the same pressure
yes.
at the same size?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Keep the pressure to whatever the car maker says that they should be.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's go to Amy in Massachusetts. Oh, Andy. I'm sorry. Andy in Massachusetts. You're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I got I'm looking at purchasing a 2002 Volkswagen Jetta VR6. The price is right. I'm looking just for a commuter vehicle, but it needs a new clutch kit. So I just wanted Gordon's opinion on that car and that engine, and if it's worth it, if I can get the car at the right price to make those repairs.
Yeah, that's a nice combination, that VR6 engine. Good power, good economy, no timing belt to be worried about changing when they hit, 90,000.
Is it chain?
Yeah, it's chain-driven. It's a very, very compact engine. It's a 15-degree V, so it takes up about the same space as a four-cylinder. So to answer your question, if the car is nice and it's not rusty and you buy it right, put a clutch in it and enjoy the car.
What do you think about a higher-grade clutch kit, or should I just go standard with what came with it originally?
If you're just going to use the car normally, you don't need to get a high-performance clutch kit. I mean, they make them, especially for that VR6, but I would make sure I got a good quality kit, something that is like a Vallejo or, something that is sourced from potentially where the manufacturer got the clutch from.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy. All right. This one came via email, and don't know who this is from, but this person says, I have a 2004 Toyota Camry. If I slow down to almost stopping, but not quite, and then try to accelerate again, it'll hesitate, not accelerate immediately. I never think of this, and my foot continues to depress the accelerator, so when it does kick in, my car jumps. Sometimes when this happens, at around 20 miles per hour, it shifts hard, meaning it seems to jump or lurch. This has always happened. Do you know why either or both might happen?
Tell me the year again, Ray, of the car.
It was a 2004 Toyota Camry.
My quick answer would be have the throttle plate checked and cleaned to make sure it's not sticking or binding. It's an electronic throttle plate. So when you step down on the accelerator pedal, a signal goes to the computer saying we are requesting the throttle to be opened. It then opens the throttle electronically. If that plate is getting gummed up, it'll stick, and then the computer will say, we got trouble, keep going, and then bang, now it's open further than it should be.
Yeah.
That's my quick answer.
You brought up computers, and you and I didn't even mention the hacking issue.
Yes.
And we have so many calls now. I got to tell you and I talked about this possibility months ago
this
program.
We did.
And now it's come to light.
We may have touched on it years ago. I don't know.
It was a while back.
But we've talked about the potential for today's onboard computers to get hacked. And early on, it was totally impossible because they're not linked to anything. Well, now they are.
Yeah.
And particularly in the Jeeps that were just featured on a bunch of newscasts. With the Uconnect and the sound, the entertainment system of the vehicle is tied into the nav and it links up via the Sprint network to the internet.
Yep.
So now hackers can hack into your car via the internet, and these guys were able to change the radio volume and run the wipers, turn on the lights.
The blowers, the air conditioner, and whatnot.
And now I watched the video, and I didn't study everything I could on it, but that the particular Jeep that they hacked must have been a really high-end model with Park Assist.
Yeah.
Because did you see the video?
I read a bit of the article in Wired.
The guy in the Jeep took his hands off the steering wheel, and the wheel turned, from the commands of the hackers.
Yeah.
And according to the article, they were able to control the brakes, which is going into the ABS system.
Yep.
That's a lot of control outside of the driver.
So Fiat Chrysler says they have a fix for this, and you can download it yourself. But we'll talk about this next time. We have so many calls.
Yeah, yeah. Good subject,
though. I can't believe we didn't bring this up earlier.
We're so busy.
I guess that's the case. Let's go to Barbara in upstate New York. Barbara, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling about my son-in-law's 2006 Toyota Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
When he was having the engine replaced on it, the guy who was working on it said, well, you need it, the frame is in rough shape. And there was a recall on the frame. We took it to the Toyota dealership, and sure enough, they said, oh, yes, you're entitled to a brand new frame. It's part of the recall. Then they said that because there was some damage to his bumper, that they would return the car to him without a bumper. And That bumper has a hitch on it that my daughter needs for work. Right now they can't afford to do the body work. It would seem to, I called up corporate and I said to them, whose decision is it about, you know, who, about how much of that to repair? And they said, oh, it's a dealership's decision. And I said, well, then don't you reimburse the dealership? And I said, yes. I said, well, who, so here's my question. Can they return the car? Don't they have to return the car in the shape that they got it?
Well,
or can they return it without the bumper on it?
That's an odd one.
Yeah. Well, yeah? The recall was concerned the frames and a
right.
bunch of stuff that was associated with the frames. But I don't believe it had anything to do with the bumpers. But if the bumper was damaged and it could not be put back on the new frame, I would have thought that somebody would call up the owner of the car and say, we're getting close to finishing up your pickup truck, but the bumper is so badly damaged from a collision that we can't make it fit. What should we do? I mean, did anybody have that discussion with the owner?
Well, they did. They said that they would return the truck without the frame. I mean, when she went in, they said, oh, we need to fix the springs, and she paid to have the springs on it.
Yeah.
But between the new engine and the new springs, you know, that sort of wiped out their savings, and now they're saying that they can put the body back together, but they can't attach the bumper. And it would seem to me that they could do anything. I mean, that's they're a body shop.
Yeah, and again, without knowing the circumstances, you know, I think I would need to know exactly why the bumper won't fit anymore, and I'm sure it's because it's been out of shape. Probably when they unbolted it, it changed its shape. It was being held in place by the bolts, and it's so sprung that now they won't line up anymore.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Can they? Is that something that they can adjust, they can fix or something?
Get a new bumper, right?
Well, yeah. That, I mean, a new bumper, maybe a used one, if there's any out there that are nice to bolt back on there. But, yeah, you definitely need a bumper, that's for sure.
We definitely need a bumper.
Yeah.
You don't think that they would have to put the bumper back on because the bumper's there?
You know, I don't know, because there was a time when pickup trucks were delivered without rear bumpers. So I don't know if it's an inspection or, you know, if it's a safety issue or what. But I think they should talk to them a little more in detail.
Wow. Barbara, thanks a lot. Interesting call. Let's go quickly to Mary in Rensselaer. Mary, you have about 30 seconds.
Okay. Have a 2012 Subaru. Moving to California, trying to decide whether to sell it or keep it and buy one out there or ship it.
Oh, that's a tough question.
Well, it's a 12 Impreza. Do you like the car?
I love it.
Did you have any reason to get rid of it at this point other than your move?
No, other than the cost of shipping or driving it, yeah.
Unless it's violently expensive to transport it and you think you can sell it here and do all right money-wise, take it with you so you'll have immediate transportation when you get there, and then decide once you get rolling if you're just going to keep the car and drive it for years or you decide to get rid of it then.
Boy, a nice cross-country trip is fun anyway.
You available, Ray?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if the price is right.
It's scary between Denver and Phoenix, but other than that, it's fun, yeah.
You could probably hire some teenagers to drive it for you.
There you go. And if you get it back in one piece, you're all set. Hey, Mary, thanks. We're out of time.
Okay. Bye now. Okay, thank you. Bye.
That's an interesting one, but cross-country trips are great.
I haven't gone super cross-country. I haven't gone across the country.
No,
friends of mine.
Have you gone north-south? Have you gone down to Florida? That's a fun drive,
too. Not behind the wheel.
Oh, gosh.
Only in the air.
Did that solo a couple times. It's a great time. You got to stop, though. You got to stop
many
at least
times.
Once. Stop overnight. Well, thanks, Gordon. We appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake, serving local grass-fed beef, Milwaukee hot dogs and sausages, beer-battered fish fry, and handmade milkshakes. PiratesLakesideGrill.com. SPAC, presenting the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center for 6 performances, August 9th through 25th at the Spa Little Theater. SPAC.org for tickets. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. And Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, presenting Free Maybe Farm Canal Fest this Saturday, featuring music, storytelling, games, crafts, demonstration, Erie Canal photo exhibit, and ice cream sundaes for kids, SchenectadyHistorical.org. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to you at home for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Deb Malik answered the calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, well, today's Thursday. That means tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. We'll see you.